Dominique.
He's speaking in French to me. What's happened?
I live in France, dummy. This is what happens here.
Is that your French voice?
Dominique. Bah oui.
Oh my God, you speak more in your head voice in French.
What do you mean I speak more in my head voice?
You've got like more upper resonances.
Oh, is this opera lingo that I don't know about?
Maybe.
I'm a bit more high-pitched in French, apparently. I hear myself on recordings and I'm sometimes like a really squeaky little brat. That's quite weird.
Anyway. Hello, listeners.
Hi.
And welcome to the Europeans Podcast. Remember how to podcast, Katie.
Yeah, sorry. I'm just a little bit distracted by the massive certificate that I'm looking at right now.
Yay, we won a prize. Although it's just got Katie's name on it, not mine, so...
Awkward.
Apparently Katie won a prize.
I may or may not share it with you. But yeah, you might have noticed, listeners, last week we sounded a little bit morose at the top of last week's show, which is because I thought I was going all the way to Brussels for an award ceremony for a prize that we were not going to win. I was very wrong, and we're delighted to tell you that we are among the proud winners of this year's Spinelli Prize. Spinelli Prize being basically a prize for projects that make the EU feel less boring and far away. And that is what we try and do every week on this podcast. So it's really nice to know that we're apparently quite good at it.
It was all our pessimism last week that made us win, wasn't it?
Definitely. But yeah, it's amazing news. And along with quite a large certificate, we're going to be handed quite a large check to go with it, which we really, really want to use to develop the show. And we've got some big ideas for the kind of things that we want to do, which we would like you to add to, by the way. So get in touch if you have any ideas for where you'd like to see this podcast going.
Yeah, it's quite big news for us that we've got a little bit of money, because we have been doing this for free alongside our jobs for the last kind of 18 months, I think. And we love doing it, but it does sometimes take its toll on us. So to get this validation from the European Commission is like pretty big deal for us. We are, of course, still incredibly grateful to our Patreon supporters for their regular support, which really makes a difference to our monthly costs. So thank you, Katie, for going over there to pick it up. I'm glad you survived Brussels.
I had a very nice time. Brussels is a nice place. I wouldn't hear a bad word said about it.
Good. Hey, that's the first time anyone's ever said that on our podcast.
What have you been doing while I've been winning prizes?
I am currently in Erfurt in the middle Germany, visiting my husband who's working here, and it's snowing.
Is it?
It's May and it's snowing and I'm really confused, and I think the climate apocalypse has hit us once again.
Did you bring the clothes for snow?
No.
Going out in a little skimpy vest?
Already packed away my gloves, or hand shoes as they call them in this part of the world.
Do they really?
Handschuhe? Handschuhe, yeah. And in Dutch, handschoene. But I just love it.
That's wonderful.
Shoes are for your feet. Anyway, we've got a nice show coming up for you this week, I think. We're going to be celebrating the 150th birthday of the periodic table. It's this amazing table of elements that you will have learned about in school that was created by the Russian chemist Dmitry Mendeleev. And we're going to be speaking to a bit of a like famous YouTube chemist, Sir Martin Polyakov, who has been making some actually hundreds of videos about the periodic table over the last few years and has become a bit of a celeb because of it.
And because of his amazing hair.
More of that later.
But first,
Commemoration Corner.
Oh, we got one this week, finally.
Not only is the main interview basically an extended Commemoration Corner, but it was also the 500th anniversary of the death of Leonardo da Vinci, or Deathiversary, as we would refer to it if I had my way.
Death Day.
Death Day.
Like in Harry Potter. We've had this conversation.
Oh, have we?
Yeah. We've been doing this for too long.
Yeah, we should cancel the podcast. There have been lots of celebrations around the world, ranging from the display of a newly discovered portrait at the Queen's Gallery in London to the presentation of a lock of his hair, which has also been newly discovered and is thought to be his, but they're doing some tests to verify it.
I think that's creepy.
So do I. And also, I think it just sounds completely mad that they've suddenly like stumbled across the lock of hair of a man who died 500 years earlier. But apparently it had been hidden away in a private collection in the US. And yeah, tests are underway now to confirm whether it really is his.
Wow.
So make sure you, if you die and want to leave some of your hair, that you like label it clearly so that people don't have to go through all these complicated tests. That's my advice for you today.
Good tip. Thank you, Dominic.
The anniversary has also seen some diplomatic tensions between France and Italy around these celebrations. Da Vinci was Italian, but died in France after having moved there aged 64 to work for King Francis I. 5 of the 14 paintings that are attributed to Da Vinci are in the Louvre, and they had sought some of the other paintings on loan from Italy for an exhibition. But an undersecretary in the Italian Minister of Culture said that France was trying too hard to be center stage in these celebrations, and that, quote, Leonardo is Italian. He only died in France. So, yeah, things have been a little bit tense between France and Italy, and things have been a little bit tense between France and Italy anyway, because of the political differences between Macron's government and the populist government in power in Italy. But things cleared up for a day when Italian President Mattarella visited President Macron in France for a day of celebrations, setting aside their diplomatic differences to celebrate this genius who died 500 years ago.
Happy death day, Da Vinci.
Happy death anniversary. Who's it been a bad week for? Let's start with bad week, shall we? Because I've been talking way too much.
Well, you're never going to stop. Yes, it was a bad week for censorship in Poland after the Polish National Museum in Warsaw decided it was going to take down an artwork that had been hanging there for years. The artwork in question is called Consumer Art. It's a video that was made in 1973 by the Polish feminist artist Natalia LL. What is so upsetting about this artwork? Well, it is a video of a young woman enjoying a banana. And when I say enjoying, she's like really enjoying it. You might think that as far as contemporary art goes, that's nothing really out of the ordinary for a European art gallery. And like I say, it hung on the wall of Poland's National Museum for years and years until last week, when you can guess what happened.
It got taken down.
It got taken down along with another work by a female Polish artist, Katarzyna Kozera. This one apparently showing a woman walking two men dressed as dogs on leads, which apparently was a bit too BDSM for their liking.
Disgusting.
Disgusting. As for the bananas, we're not quite sure who it was that decided they didn't like this video, but there is a new head of the museum, Jerzy Mijalek, and what we know is that he decided that he wanted the artwork taken down after a visit to the culture ministry. And when he was asked why he'd done that, he said the museum had received complaints about it being obscene. He told one newspaper that, quote, certain topics related to gender shouldn't be explicitly shown.
Ugh.
And he told the Onet news website that he was, quote, opposed to showing works that could irritate sensitive young people. You're a sensitive young person, Dominic. So what I want you to do is watch this video of this girl eating a banana, and we're going to see how irritated you get. You ready?
Yes. Oh, it's like one of the mouth warm-ups we do in my for my production at the moment.
You fillet bananas for your warm-ups?
No, we don't do that. There's a bit before the banana comes up where she's like putting her fingers around her lips and like exercising her tongue, which is something that we sometimes do at the beginning of rehearsal.
Ooh, we should do that for the podcast.
Maybe the banana would make it more effective. Definitely make it more tasty.
It'd be rich in potassium.
Oh, Katie, this is... I can't believe you're making me watch this.
What, because it's making you so irritated as a sensitive young person?
I'm so sensitive, yeah.
I mean, personally for me, it did make me feel quite ill. Not because it's supposedly erotic, but because the banana is quite bruised.
Yes, I hate a bruised banana.
There's something about bruised bananas, particularly the idea of like running your tongue over a bruised banana, that just makes me really unhappy.
Oh my God, another banana's appeared. Okay, I'm turning it off. I'm sorry, I've had enough.
The museum was equally disgusted and took the artwork down. But did Poles take it lying down? No, they did not. Very quickly, fans of art and artistic freedom in general struck up an online campaign in protest of the decision. And they started posting pictures of themselves eating bananas under the hashtag banana selfie. And the movement also spilled briefly onto the streets too. There was a protest outside the museum of people wielding bananas. After the protests, the museum chief, Mr. Mijalek, backed down and said, fine, I will put these two artworks back up, which might seem like a victory, but he only agreed to put them back up until May the 6th, i.e. Monday, which is before you're listening to this, ostensibly because the whole modern art wing of the museum is being reorganized. But the banana video is definitely going back to the warehouse, apparently to make room for other work, which almost definitely won't mimic fellatio or involve BDSM. The sad thing is that this is just the latest evidence that under the super conservative government in Poland, promoting very conservative values, artistic expression is taking a beating. Artists have particularly taken aim at the culture minister, Piotr Galinski. He has cut subsidies for festivals that were planning to include plays that touch on sensitive Catholic themes, and he's cut funding for the European Solidarity Centre, Centre, which is this culture centre that is very popular with critics of the government. As for the bananas, the National Museum is owned by the state, but Mr. Mijialek insists that he wasn't bowing to government pressure in making the decision. But yeah, despite this really fun display of people power and people posting these pictures of themselves holding bananas, and it having some effect in terms of getting the museum to temporarily reverse the decision, ultimately the bananas are staying off the wall. And I still think this episode is quite a grim reminder of how this government's really conservative priorities are affecting all kinds of aspects of life in Poland, including creativity.
Yeah, it's a fun story with quite like a grim undercurrent.
Let me cheer you up by telling you briefly about the artist, Natalia Lachlakowicz, better known as Natalia LL. She's in her 80s now, but she was really a pioneer of avant-garde feminist art in Poland, often involving the body. The banana piece, the model actually eats a few different things, suggestively. Lots of people have interpreted it as like a humorous comment on how sexualized advertising is. Natalia LL herself has said it was a criticism of queues for food under communism in Poland. Have a look and see what you think for yourself. We will post a link. The beauty of the internet is that this bad decision by a museum won't stop people from seeing Natalia's work. So that is one small victory.
Yeah, probably quite the opposite. Probably more people have seen this video because of them trying to shut it down.
We would never have watched it this morning if it wasn't for this stupid decision.
No, there's a silver lining to every cloud.
Yay. Speaking of silver linings, who's had a good week?
Well, last week was a very good week for the Spanish Social Democrats, the Socialist Party of Pedro Sanchez. They won 123 of the 350 seats in Parliament in what was the third general election in 4 years. Oof. So many general elections. Sanchez has been described as the only socialist leading a major European country, and it does certainly seem like Spain is bucking a trend with this election. His Social Democratic Party also seemed to benefit from the decline of the left-wing party Podemos, who lost 29 seats, but may end up supporting the Social Democrats along with its allies. The second-ranked party were the Liberal Popular Party, who saw huge losses compared to the last election, taking only 66 seats, which is 71 seats fewer than they had in the last parliament. Mm. Sanchez is hoping to govern without a coalition agreement, but he has various options and also gained an absolute majority in the upper chamber, which should make things somewhat easier for him. Many headlines across Europe focused on the fact that Vox became the first far-right party to take seats in parliament since Franco's dictatorship. Their presence in parliament and their power in shaping some of the debate is indeed alarming, but they only picked up 24 seats, which was below their expectations, so ha.
Ha!
Also, the rise of Vox kind of split a lot of the vote on the right, which took votes away from the Popular Party. So in some ways, it kind of helped the socialists electorally. That's kind of
silver
a
linings.
Pretty dark way of talking about silver linings. Sanchez's campaign had some pretty eye-catching left-wing proposals, such as a 22% rise in the minimum wage and help for jobless people over 52. Things that clearly resonated with people, and they say that they run a campaign that was not just based on fear, it was based on hope. The question of Catalonian independence is an ongoing problem for Spain and will continue to provide difficulties for Sanchez. The right-wing parties had attempted to paint Sanchez as a Catalonian sellout, but there are signs that he will actually resist depending on support from the Catalan Republican left in order to be able to take a slightly tougher line with Catalonian separatists. Anyway, it was no doubt a really good week for the Spanish Socialist Party, so congrats to Sanchez and his merry band of Social Democrats.
I thought it was interesting that you said he's like one of the very few socialist leaders in Europe, so in that way he's kind of bucking the trend. But I feel like this week there have been quite a few headlines saying like, is the centre-left back in Europe in general? I guess kind of like hinging on these Spanish results. But also, if you look at like the Finnish elections, centre-left won there as well. It's interesting, there's like two conflicting narratives depending on like how depressed the journalists are that you're reading. Mm. Like if you read some headlines about Spain or Finland or loads of places, it's like, yay, social democracy is kind of fine. If you read the others, the things that they emphasise are like, the far right have got the first seats in parliament since the fall of fascism, or in Finland, yes, maybe the centre-left run, but there's now this far right party in the coalition that hates immigrants and gay people. So I kind of don't know how depressed to be about stuff in general right now.
Yeah, that's difficult. I guess we have to take whatever optimism we can. But Finland, it doesn't really count as a major European country, does it? Sorry, Finland.
Oh, do you want to be on the record saying that, Dominic? We're going to get so much hate mail from our Finnish listeners. Apologies, Finland.
I think Finland's great. Let's move on, Katie, before I offend any other entire nations.
Good idea. Tell me about this interview that you've done this week. Why are we talking about the periodic table?
Okay, so yeah, our interview today is kind of like an extended commemoration corner because we have a very special guest on the line to talk about the periodic table, which is celebrating its 150th birthday. And now Katie abandoned me this week to interview a world-leading chemist on my own.
So that I could go and win a massive prize on our behalf. Yeah. Thank you very much.
I think mainly she was just wanting to see me flail about trying to ask questions, pretending I knew anything about science.
Pretty much.
Well, I did it. And actually, it was surprisingly fun because I was speaking to a rather special scientist, Sir Martin Polyakov, a professor at the University of Nottingham and the face of an incredibly popular YouTube channel called The Periodic Table of Videos. He will tell us a bit about that later, but the main reason why I was talking to him was because of the periodic table, the thing that haunted me at school and is celebrating its 150th birthday. It was invented by the Russian chemist Dmitri Mendeleev, and it has been adjusted various times since, but it was extraordinary for not only categorizing the elements in a really sensible way, but also for predicting some elements that hadn't even been found at the time. Our guest, Sir Martin Polyakov, has been making some headlines recently after publishing an article in a journal co-authored with his daughter, in which they suggest that perhaps the periodic table would be better if it was turned on its head.
Whoa.
Literally.
Is it comparable to that movement to turn the map of the world upside down?
Yeah, he actually does talk about maps in the journal a bit. It's a bit like that, but it's mainly based on the theory that... I'll let him explain it. He'll explain it better than me. I think if I try and talk about science anymore, that I'm going to get myself caught in knots.
Stop talking. Let's hear from Martin.
I imagine most of our listeners became acquainted with Mendeleev's periodic table at school. And it seemed to me that it did the job pretty well at explaining to children like me how to categorize the different elements and their properties. I was wondering, do you have a huge admiration for this as an educational device? And also, do you still find it incredibly useful as a fully fledged and knighted scientist?
In the office that I'm sitting in, I have something like 50 different periodic tables hanging around and drinking tea out of a periodic table cup and so on. I have great admiration for Mendeleev. I would have really enjoyed to meet him, to have tea with him or something. I think it's important to say that he wasn't the only person who thought about classifying the elements, but I think he had three great advantages and why he has won through compared to the others. The first thing is that he predicted the existence of elements which hadn't been discovered up to that date, and not only predicted there would be an element, but predicted its density, its atomic weight, and so on. And seven of these were subsequently found. I think he did actually predict some that didn't exist, but that's been quietly forgotten. The second advantage he had was that, well, obviously I didn't know him personally, but I think he was quite a good self-publicist. And sort of insisted every time his thing was mentioned that it had the word Mendeleev attached to it. And thirdly, even by 19th century standards, he looked pretty wild. I've been told, but I haven't checked whether this is true, that he had only had his hair cut once a year. And then he hired somebody who sheared sheep just to trim his hair. But obviously his wild appearance is something that has appeal to people in the intervening years.
Perhaps that was part of his idea of self-publicity, creating a strong image for himself.
I should say that I also have somewhat wild hair, so I can attest that this is quite a useful tool in one's life.
When you identify as a scientist, yeah, it's funny. There should be a study done into scientists and wild hair, along with conductors and wild hair, probably.
My daughter is a psychologist, and she sent me a postcard some time ago in which school children had been asked to draw what a psychologist looked like. and it was not a bad representation of what I look like. There is a certain brand of napkins, table napkins, which have a character on it who looks remarkably like me. I also have Playmobil and Lego figures that look rather like me as well.
Could you tell me a bit more about how you became interested in chemistry? And do you think it was that you already looked a bit like a chemist and therefore you realised, oh, this is somewhere where I'll fit in?
Definitely not the case. My father, who was a physicist, decided when I was very young, I'm not quite sure whether it was 4 or 5, that I would become a scientist. My father, grandfather, son, and parents-in-law were or are physicists. And so I really thought that I would become a physicist, but my maths wasn't good enough. But I had a very good memory, so it was quite easy to become a chemist.
Do you remember when you first found out about the periodic table?
That's an interesting question. It was obviously when I was at school, but I still have my first chemistry book. And very surprisingly, it doesn't have a periodic table in it. And so I persuaded my parents to buy me a periodic table, which came in 2 parts. There was a sort of small part, A3 size, or perhaps even smaller, that was black. And then there was a big blue one, which I hung over the mantelpiece in my bedroom. So I slept with this enormous periodic table in my bedroom. I should say that my wife now forbids anything with a periodic table in our bedroom. I've been given nice blankets and quilts with a periodic table, but they remain in my office.
Wow, but it sounds like it certainly made an impression on you. And now, in the year that we're celebrating the 150th anniversary of the periodic table, you've come forward with an idea to literally turn the table upside down. Not metaphorically. Why do you want to turn it on its head?
I was just playing with the periodic table one day, and in PowerPoint, you can flip images about the horizontal and about the vertical. And I can't remember why I flipped the periodic table above the horizontal axis. And then when I saw it, I was really quite surprised because it struck me as looking quite weird, but at the same time, really quite useful. And the reason why I suddenly thought it was useful is that if you think of the periodic table a bit like a graph, you have an axis along the bottom, which the numbers get bigger as you go from left to right. And you have a vertical axis where the numbers get bigger when you go from the bottom to the top.
Yeah.
There's one thing that we have to teach students, which is how the number of electrons in an atom increases as you go to heavier and heavier elements. And so there is this rather strange contradiction that you have things that fill up from the top, whereas if you're pouring water into your periodic table cup, for example, the water fills up from the bottom. So it suddenly struck me if it turned it the other way around, it would make the filling up much more logical. I thought this was quite an amusing idea and wrote a little article about it and sent it to a journal. And the editor said it was quite a fun idea, but wouldn't people read this, the periodic table, like a piece of text where you begin at the top and then read downwards? And so I then had the idea to consult my daughter, Ellen, who is an experimental psychologist and has machines which can track where people's eyes are looking when they look at an object. And so we collaborated, and Ellen and her colleague Alexis measured what happens when you turn the periodic table upside down. Do people look at it in the same way, that's beginning at the top, or do they look at it differently? And somewhat to our surprise, it turns out that when you turn it upside down, people look at the bottom more than they do at the top. Mm-hmm. And I, of course, got really excited because it's not very often that fathers and daughters can publish a paper together, and even more unusual if they're in completely different subject areas like psychology and chemistry. So it was great fun.
How have the scientific community reacted to this fun and interesting idea?
Several people have said that it's interesting. There's one person, a Nobel Prize winner, who said that what's wrong with the existing periodic table? It has done for 150 years. But I think I have been surprised by the relatively warm reception that we've had from people.
I mean, the periodic table has been changed pretty consistently since its inauguration 150 years ago. It's not the same as it was when it was created. So could you argue that this is just another natural evolution of the table?
When Mendeleev first propounded it, he had it, as it were, on its side. Things which are now vertical were horizontal. And there is a huge number of people who believe they have discovered the true version of the periodic table. Even just sitting round me in my office, I have one shaped like a galaxy, one like a Christmas tree, all sorts of different shapes. And each of these people sort of propounds that their periodic table is somewhere closer to the mystical truth of the periodic table. We're not making any such suggestion about our periodic table, merely saying that it's fun and maybe useful for explaining some things rather better than the current one does.
Before we go, I wanted to ask you about the fact that you've become a bit of a YouTube star with your videos about the periodic table. I was wondering if you could introduce our listeners to that, to tell us a bit about how you started having a YouTube channel.
In 2008, my university began collaborating with a very talented young video maker, an Australian called Brady Harron. And he came to me with the idea that we should make one video about each of the 118 elements on the periodic table. And I told him he was mad because you can easily make videos about hydrogen and sodium. They're explosions and there's no problem. But at that time, nobody had made even one atom of element 117. So how could you make a video about an element that nobody had ever observed? He persuaded me it was worth trying. So we made 120 videos. That's one for each element, introduction and a trailer. And we made all of those in just over 5 weeks.
Wow.
It was just at the time that YouTube was taking off. It was in the summer. There was not many stories in the press, so it caught people's imagination. And then after that, the viewers sent in comments saying, I don't care what they do as long as they keep making videos. We're now approaching our 11th anniversary. We've made 652 videos. We have over 200 million views on YouTube and nearly 1.2 million YouTube subscribers. So if any of your listeners are interested, they should go and look at YouTube periodic table of videos and start watching.
I am now going to go and watch like every single video on Martin's YouTube channel. I loved chemistry at school because we got to burn things sometimes. So I'm totally going to get back into it.
And you really should look it up, if only to see that he is right. Like, his hair is really typical scientist hair. And that's really fun. That's when it's not so fun that this is a podcast and you can't see him.
Damn it. Well, that was wonderful, Dominic. Thank you very much. I think you should do the interview every week. And you're about to do Happy Ending as well now. So I'm just having a great time. I think I might just go run myself a bath or something.
Oh, enjoy yourself. Never make me do an interview about science again, please.
Okay.
I considered being lazy this week and just saying happy ending for us because we got a prize. Even though, Katie, I still don't think you got given flowers, so you didn't get to use your much practiced Dutch phrase, dank je voor de bloemen.
Dank je voor de bloemen. No, not yet. I'm still waiting for an opportunity to use that one.
Oh, shit.
It'll come.
So people, if you see Katie out and about in Paris, then give her some flowers and maybe you'll get her catchphrase that she's been
in Dutch
waiting to use forever. but no, I'm not going to be lazy. We did have a happy ending this week, but there are other happy endings that are also important. One of our Patreon supporters, Anna Yorick, pointed out a very good and potentially happy story from my hometown of Amsterdam, where an alderman has come up with a very ambitious plan, which I think should make us happy with its ambition, even if it still has a long way to go until it is passed by the government and brought into action. The local government, I should have said. Alderman Sharon Dykesma has published a proposal to ban all petrol cars from the city by 2030.
Wow.
Yes, this is a very ambitious plan, which will require between 16,000 and 23,000 electric car charging stations, up from the current level of around 3,000. Whether or not it's good news also obviously depends on where the electricity is coming from, because electric cars are only any good if the electricity is coming from renewable sources and not from dirty coal. But I agree with Anna, who suggested this story, that this is just about a happy ending. Of course, Amsterdam isn't the only city moving towards setting ambitious goals. Many cities are in the process of banning diesel cars from their centres, Paris, Athens and Madrid, for example. And others are going down the road of banning just the most polluting cars on the street. But Amsterdam's goal is one of the most ambitious we've seen. And with the right support and investment, I hope that it will be successful.
Wow. That would be like life-changing for you, Dominic, when you're like going around on your little bicycle. You just have lovely clean air to breathe.
If there were no dirty cars, yeah, it would actually. Because apparently there are multiple roads in the city that break the EU's rules for how much nitrogen. I don't know anything about science. Why am I trying to talk about science again?
You need to go and launch a spin-off science podcast, Stat.
We've talked about this before, that we should have a podcast that's like Katie and Dominic talking shit about science.
No.
And we really shouldn't. I don't know why I'm talking about it again.
We absolutely shouldn't. It's the worst idea you've had all week.
But it's coming up again and again, and that's a sign. Anyway, look, I'm going to go and frolic around in the snow here in Erfurt.
You do that. I'm going to go and frolic around in the April showers that we're having in Paris.
Cool, enjoy, and thank you again to everyone for listening to us. We are very grateful. Without any listeners, we definitely wouldn't have won the prize, and we would have given up a long time ago. So please do get in touch with us if you have any ideas or if you want to give us feedback, but keep it kind, please. Europeanspodcast@gmail.com is our email address, and you can find us on Twitter @EuropeansPod, Instagram @EuropeansPodcast, and we're also on Facebook if you just type in the Europeans Podcast.
Right, I'll leave you to go play in the snow now.
Thanks. Have a good week, everyone.
Bye.